If you're talking about kids and what they will and won't eat, the classic picky eater from TV is Mikey from the old Life cereal commercials. In case you don't remember those, a couple of gap-toothed kids sit at a breakfast table and they're studying the strange new cereal someone's dared to put in their bowls.
It's supposed to be good for you. I'm not gonna try it.
Let's get Mikey.
Yeah, he won't eat it. He hates everything.
Mikey doesn't blink. He doesn't talk. He betrays no emotion. He just sits there in his red turtleneck and digs in, devouring bite after bite. His friends are shocked.
He likes it! Hey, Mikey!
There is something about this commercial that rang so true for parents and kids that it stayed on the air from 1972 to 1986. That's 14 years, an eternity in the life of a commercial. But now, more than 30 years later, just about every restaurant in town has a kids' menu, and honestly, most of them are still geared toward Mikey's. Is that a good thing? I'm Gina Kaufman. We're talking kids' food in Kansas City to kick off this Central Standard Food Show. My guest for that is a self-proclaimed lunch lady, Jackie Kincaid. She works at Scion, where she runs the hot lunch service, as well as a program to teach kids about food, from growing food to cooking it and eating well. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Gina. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Have you met any Mikey's?
Oh, I have a Mikey.
Mom of Mikey. What is your personal philosophy when it comes to how kids eat, or I guess what kids will and won't eat and how malleable that is?
I kind of basically started cooking once I had my first son. He's 12 now. I have two boys. I have a 12 and a 10-year-old. My 12-year-old eats everything. My 10-year-old eats nothing. I've just discovered over the years with doing that you have to meet kids where they're at with their palate and kids eat with their eyes. So where they're at with their palate is taste, but kind of eyes first.
Is eyes first like yellow in this case? Because it seems that all kids' foods, so quote unquote kids' foods, are yellow.
Are yellow?
Yeah. Mac and cheese, quesadillas, like
that's a really good question.
Off-whitish yellow.
I would love to know if yellow has anything to do with it. I always try and put as much color on my trays as I can. The gal that helps me in the kitchen every day, we kind of laugh when I have a tray that just doesn't have any color. Like quesadillas is corn and rice and quesadillas and orange, and it's just this very yellow tray, which is unattractive to me. I don't love it, but.
Kids' menus at restaurants, for the most part, seem to adhere to this very prevalent idea that if kids prefer grilled cheese and hot dogs, you just have to give them grilled cheese and hot dogs or else they'll starve to death or something.
I mean, I think that's true up to a certain point. Sure, there's definitely, like, my 10-year-old is only going to eat what he's going to eat. But my 12-year-old's going to try stuff that you put in front of him. And again, kind of going back to what I said, where you just have to meet children where they're at.
So talk to me a little bit more about how you do that.
So at Scion, where I do the hot lunch, I feed, we have children that we call the petites. They're 2 years old and I go all the way up to eighth grade. So for the petites, I modify what I have on the lunch menu every day. So if it's like a ham sandwich, I'll just roll up a piece of ham and put a cheese stick with it. The middle school kids will get a ham sandwich, with cheese, and they'll have lettuce and tomatoes and mustard and onions and dressings on it and stuff. And then going on down the line, you just kind of simplify it. So my K1 and 2 year olds, or my K first and second graders, they'll have just the sandwich with meat and cheese. So, you know, you kind of just, like I said, they sort of eat with their eyes first. So they're going to look at it. And if something doesn't look like they're straight away just going to be like, I don't like that. They don't like it because what they're seeing, not what they're tasting necessarily. So, like, you kind of, you know, a good example too is like a bolognese, a red sauce with meat in it. An older kid's going to just totally devour that. And a little kid's going to look at it and be like, there's something in there that I'm not even going to go there. So,
little pieces of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Little bits.
Like, so how do you modify that for a littler kid?
Just as simple as possible. Yeah. Just, almost kind of a la carte, take it apart, so that they can sort of pick and choose and put it together if they want to.
Can you talk about spice and bold flavor?
So when I first started cooking, I started a little baby food business. My neighborhood mom's group supported me and said, cook that for my kids. And they were all the same age. And I think that for me and what worked with my kids was layering flavors like that. So, like, obviously a little tiny baby just wants pureed sweet potato. you know, 3 to 6 months into eating, they want more flavor. So do some sauteed onions in with the sweet potato. Add some garlic in with the sweet potato. Add some sort of spice in with the sweet potato and so build and build on it. So that because their palates are developing along with everything else. And so the slower that you take those introduction of flavors.
There seems to be a trend almost in the opposite direction. Like from the second the kid's eating, pile on the spices or else it's going to be too late or something.
Well, if you are one of those lucky people that has a child that eats anything, then absolutely. I had, you know, my child that's hard to eat now at 10 ate everything as a baby. And then once he started having a choice and the free will of what he was going to put in his mouth, I had to learn to back down and modify that with him.
Can I share an observation from my own very limited experience
sure.
as a parent of one?
Yeah.
When my kid first started eating, he was just not into most foods. He liked fruit and yogurt and pasta and then everything else maybe, but it was always a gamble. And back then, someone told me to give him one thing I knew he would eat with every meal and just keep offering whatever the grown-ups were eating along with it. Don't make a big deal of whether he says yes or no. Just keep offering. And it felt like a really weird ritual to keep offering stuff I knew he was going to say no to. But I did it. And one night, my husband and I were eating fish, and I offered him some, like always, expecting him to say no. And he said yes. In fact, he said, "I eat the fish." And then he devoured my dinner. And ever since then, he eats fish. And I am so grateful for the advice because I don't think on my own I would have kept offering. I would have just assumed my kid doesn't eat that. And that has really been sort of my guiding thing ever since. Just
no, it's awesome.
Just that's, don't assume.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to do it. I put salad on the plate 2 or 3 days a week on the school lunch trays. And I mean, I know most of it goes in the trash, but, you know, eventually they're going to try it. Eventually they're going to do something to taste it. There's also sort of the power of like influence. You know, if everybody else around you is eating it, you know, you're going to maybe try it too.
Or if you're hungry enough.
Yeah, if you're hungry enough.
I also got the advice, you never find a dead cat in a tree, which is a really weird way of saying you're not going to starve to death with food in front of you.
Right. You know, someone told me one time that in the Midwest, as Midwesterners, like where normally you would have to repeat something, you know, a half a dozen times to offering someone a salad, for instance, that they're not going to try it until about 6 or 7 times that is in front of them. In the Midwest, it's we supposedly need like 2 or 3 times that amount of, you know, so we're 12 to like 16 times into having something put in front of us before we're willing to believe them and try it. So
this does bring me to kids' menus. So trust me, I know how helpful it is to keep the peace and give kids something they will for sure eat. But people eat out in restaurants more than they used to, and it's such an opportunity for adults to try new things. Why can't we let kids have that same experience rather than offering them the same limited selection everywhere they go? Can you talk a little bit about, you know, just the idea of what is food for kids and maybe what isn't food for kids?
I think it goes back to that original statement that I said is like meeting kids where they're at. You know, like you want a restaurant experience to be enjoyable for everybody. You know, you're there to be out and to not be working hard and serving at home and have an argument and a meltdown with your kid.
Totally.
So sure, kids' menus are great if you want all that yellow food or orange food. But a great idea too is just to pay attention to what your kids are and aren't eating and ask the restaurant to participate. So if there is like a pasta with red sauce, can I get it with the sauce on the side? Can I get it with just butter and salt? You know, like so that it's a pleasurable experience for everybody and the kids have success, because I do feel like the more that they're out and in that environment and enjoying the experience of their food as well, it will grow from there rather than be this like, you know, devastating experience going out to eat every time.
Do you have any other advice for parents when it comes to ordering for kids off the regular menu?
I think just that. I think just asking if the restaurant will participate in modifying with what that they know that their kids are going to eat.
Even with quantity, because I think that's also part of the reason people are ordering from kids' menus. Your kid's going to eat a tiny fraction of what a grown-up would eat.
Well, if they love it, hopefully you can serve it to them for lunch the next
day. Oh, yeah,
day.
Leftovers.
Or you can go home and put sauce on it and eat it yourself.
We spoke to one of our frequent guests on this show, Emily Ferris, about this. She wasn't able to make it in today, but she sent in a few recommendations for places in town that do have interesting kids options, where the style of food that the grown-ups are eating in that restaurant is also what's being offered to the kids. She recommends Boru Ramen in Waldo, where she admits to ordering the kids' salmon dish for herself via takeout sometimes. Sorry to give away that secret, Emily. And she also says that Blue Sake over in Westwood offers a bento box for kids.
Oh, yeah. That's excellent. Yeah, it's interesting because little kids love, like, I do slider burgers, and it's, like, one of the hottest lunch items that I do. A little 2-ounce ground beef with a tiny little 2-ounce bun. It's, like, kid-sized stuff for some reason has way more appeal to children, you know, that it's not overwhelming visually, this, like, massive burger. It's just a little kid's burger.
A favorite for kids throughout eternity, I assume, is mac and cheese. Do you have a mac and cheese restaurant recipe that satisfies the picky eater, but with a little something to jazz it up?
Oh yeah, I absolutely do. My mac and cheese is one of the highest order dishes as well at school. I start with a roux and just kind of a traditional bechamel, and I add several different types of cheese and salt, and top it with cheese and melt it and bake it. So it's kind of a baked mac and cheese.
You know, mac and cheese from scratch is much easier, I think, than most people assume. It's not that much harder than assembling the contents of the box. At least I don't think it is.
It's not, although I do have kind of a stress meltdown almost every I've been making mac and cheese for 8 years now in the kitchen, and I've had the sauce break once. But you do – I mean, I'm making a massive quantity, right, because I've got to do about – gosh, it's probably – 10 quarts of sauce. And so, like, when you're stirring in the butter and the flour and adding the milk and waiting for that to break or not break, it is a little bit stressful. But no, I don't think any not harder by any means, and it's going to taste a lot better than what's in that dried stuff, that's for sure.
What's something you recently served to a big group of kids that went over really well that you think might surprise some of our listeners?
I have been messing around a ton with new soups, with introducing new soups to my kids. And I did a baked potato soup the Monday before. And the kids absolutely loved it. And I was super thrilled.
Jackie Kincaid, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Tell us about your favorite kids' menus on Twitter. We can trade ideas at KCURCST. Up next, mac and cheese is not just for kids. We all love it. The food critics will be joining us on a search for the best mac and cheese in town right after this break. Stay tuned. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and now mac and cheese. I love it. You probably love it. And the restaurants of Kansas City know that, which is why there's a mouthwatering mac and cheese description on just about every menu in town. If you have a favorite, call 816-235-2888 so that your mac of choice ends up on our official list of the best macaroni and cheese in Kansas City. 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us those recommendations at KCURCST. The food critics are here. Hello, food critics.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'll just, like, break that down a little bit and introduce you all. Jenny Vergara is with us from Feast Magazine. Hi, Jenny.
Hello.
Carlton Logan is the administrator of the Facebook group Kansas City Eats. Hi, Carlton.
Good morning.
And Lou Jane Temple is with us, too. She's an author and chef and sort of a legend in the local food world. Hello, Lou Jane.
How nice. Happy holidays,
to
Gina.
You too. Okay, real quick, I want everybody's hot take on mac and cheese. Jenny?
My hot take is mac and cheese is and should be a side dish. It should never be an entree in my world unless you're 12 years old.
Never.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have kind of a grown-up point of view, I think, about about mac and cheese that probably isn't the most popular. And I'm not a hater. I love me some mac and cheese.
Yeah, I defied your rule just yesterday.
I know. I just want it on the side, and I want about 5 bites of it to go with something else.
Carlton Logan, hot take on mac and cheese.
Well, I'm sort of in the same place as Jenny.
Whoa. Okay.
What?
Yes.
All right.
It is a side dish.
Come to the dark
dish.
Side.
And I think somewhere in our history, it changed. I remember asking someone once, what did you have for dinner? And she said, Stouffer's mac and cheese. And I was like, and what? And she said, just that. And I was like, you just eat the macaroni and cheese by itself? So somewhere in our history, we decided, oh, mac and cheese is an entree.
Because maybe everyone was not touching everything else on their plates and just asking for second helpings of mac and cheese.
I guess, but to me, it's still a side. I like a little adjustment, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah, Lou Jane.
Well, my first thought about this was, I swear to God, 15 years ago, you would have to really hunt to find mac and cheese even as a side.
At a restaurant.
In a restaurant. Mm-hmm. It was a home thing. It was a thing that people made at home. And now it's the complete array of ways of serving it are in this very town. We can get it a bazillion ways. And I think it's one of those things that is just so comforting that everyone responds to it, whether you're a snooty country club person or a kid or a poor person, everybody responds to something about mac and cheese.
Sure.
And finally, restaurants got hip to it, and thus they've ruined it for you too.
And I think too, it rode the wave in of Southern cuisine when we really started going kind of hard, taking
deep,
a hard left
deep
into
in
deep South cuisine,
right,
and kind of gastropub.
Agreed.
All of a sudden, we had mac and cheese everywhere.
Well, and I would have said it's a weird subject to have right at Christmas time, but I was just in Connecticut at Thanksgiving. And the woman said, Lou Jane, will you please make your mac and cheese for us? Because I know that's the one thing that my teenagers will eat. And so it's not as a side, it is a big part of holidays now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's start getting the restaurant recommendations at 816-235-2888. Carlton, kick us off with a couple of the what you're calling traditional mac and cheese. And first, define traditional mac and cheese, then we'll get some of these recommendations.
To me, traditional is a traditional elbow macaroni noodle, cheesy sauce. Sometimes it has some shredded cheese on top so that it's baked in the oven and it gets kind of nice and crunchy and crusty on top. So two on my list are Niecy's Restaurant on Troost and also a Peachtree Restaurant. They both kind of have that traditional Southern / soul food.
And they do it well.
And they do it well. If you like traditional, those two are good options for you.
Jenny Vergara, talk to me about the macaroni and cheese appetizer at Q39.
So this is, again, another classic. I mean, I am not one for a bunch of stuff in my mac and cheese, I have to tell you. Because I want it on the side, I want it pretty classic and straightforward. I mean, maybe a little bacon every now and then is okay. But for the most part, I want crunchy breadcrumbs on top and kind of nice pasta. And that's exactly what Q39 delivers it. It is on the appetizer menu, curiously enough. Mm-hmm. But it is served in what I would call a generous side dish portion. I went with my 17-year-old son, which was a terrible mistake because I got two bites of it and he pounded the rest of it. But they use actually a little bit of a different pasta. It's not elbow. It's more that cavatappi, mm-hmm. Which is kind of a little bit longer of a curly
Q. The corkscrew.
Yeah, the corkscrew. Thank you. And it's just a classic kind of, you can tell there's several cheeses in there, probably including American, a little bit of breadcrumb on top, put in the oven for just a minute, and it's delicious.
It would probably classic. Be poor form for me to get up and go get that right now.
Well, it's the picture I've posted
really good
everywhere on social media this morning. So if you need a photo, hit me up on social media. You can check it out in full color.
In case that wasn't enticing enough. But so you mentioned bacon. So I want to also, while we're on that topic, you're recommending a mac and cheese with, it's got a smoked Gouda bacon flair. It's over at Anton's.
Yeah. You know, Anton's obviously is kind of the choose your own adventure steak place where you can kind of choose the side and the cut and the how you want it cooked. But also to go with that steak, you obviously need sides. And the mac and cheese there is really good. Gouda's a nice melty cheese to choose for mac and cheese. And it does have just a little bit of bacon bits kind of in it that gives it the crunch instead of the breadcrumbs, which I think to me kind of
scratches the same itch as nice crunchy breadcrumbs. So I like it. I like the mac and cheese. I might just go get mac and cheese and maybe skip the steak and Anton's.
So maybe today will be your first time doing this as your entree.
Maybe. But the thing is, I still need a small portion. I don't need a giant bowl of mac and cheese.
Save the rest for me.
I know. Exactly. We can split it.
Lou Jane, you are recommending Summit Grill for both, it sounds like, kind of a traditional mac and cheese side and a more elaborate entree.
Exactly. They do it as a side, and then they also do it as a seafood with seafood in it.
So what kind of seafood? You hear a lot about lobster mac and cheese specifically.
Well, that's my very, very favorite in Kansas City is the Capitol Grill lobster mac and cheese. But as it should be, because of their reputation and their price points, they should have the best. The Summit Barn Grills does not have lobster. Sometimes maybe it might if they had some left from something. But it's fish and shrimp, and it's always a good mixture of stuff. Not probably for these two who want. Who are more purist, but it's a good combo.
But there's something that works about the seafood and the mac and cheese together.
Well, what I think I don't think it's necessarily the pasta, because there are hundreds of pasta dishes with seafood, so those two things go together anyway. I think it has to do with the intensity of the cheese you use. If you use a very intense cheddar and a smoke, like the smoked Gouda, it might override the delicacy of the seafood. So I think it works if you keep those things on a nice even keel.
So you were saying that Capitol Grill has what you consider to be the best, just hands down,
yeah,
all around,
yes,
their lobster mac and cheese is your favorite mac and cheese in town.
I've gone with people for birthday events there, and when it's time to order the big, $100 steak, I order the lobster mac and cheese. It's that good and fulfilling, and of course they have fresh lobster all the time. So when I have been a private chef up in Maine, that's one thing that the repeat people that come to dinner there always ask for. When are you going to make the lobster mac and cheese? So
that fresh Maine lobster's got to help.
It's really fun to have. We have a lobster lounge, that's my name for it, down in the dock. So literally they're alive still underneath the water in a cage, and I luckily have a strong young man that I'll say, okay, I need 20 lobsters, and he'll go down with a big pot and get them. That's how fresh they are.
And you put them in mac and cheese.
And many other things. And many other things.
Well, so, Carlton, we'll get back to your traditional mac and cheese recommendations, mm-hmm, in a little bit, but I want to get into your entree recommendations, and you are recommending a 7-cheese mac and cheese.
Yes. Beignet, which has a very good reputation around town for their Cajun food, they have a 7-cheese mac and cheese. It has the cavatappi noodles, and it is really good with the bacon on top. Now, you can get other things on it, like andouille sausage and, other toppings and things like that.
But andouille sausage on mac and cheese. That sounds,
yes,
good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. What are the 7 cheeses? It's pop quiz time.
And that's the interesting thing. I've been trying to find out what they are. But I also know that they recently won best at the recent Mac and Cheese Festival.
Yes. Okay. I have to say, I really had hoped to go to the Mac and Cheese Festival.
So did I. I didn't make it.
What a trip that Kansas City has a Mac and Cheese festival.
Yes.
I love it.
Jenny can't eat it for more than a side dish. No. Some people in town can go to a whole festival.
I'm going to stay home. I'm going to be home for that one. Just ring me up. Tell me who won.
So, okay, yes. But at Beignet, you like the seven cheese macaroon.
It is, and I will tell you just to describe it because I think that really helps. It is a very cheesy sauce. It's not a thin sauce. It is very cheesy. So cheesy. I had a
How cheesy is it?
I had a serving that was probably for enough for three people, so I didn't eat it all. And the next day, I literally, when I took my spoon to, you know, get a scoop out, it was like this mass that, you know, it was just like, oh my gosh. And it didn't separate once I heated it up.
I was going to say, now we should have a conversation about cheese sauce versus just cheese.
Yes.
Because the reheat on the just cheese ends up being kind of a greasy, gloppy, gooey.
A very good point. Yeah. I had that recently.
Yeah, kind of. You have to eat the one that does not have a cheese sauce or a bechamel or a whatever.
Correct. Or a roux.
Yeah, or a roux, yes. Right. Needs to be eaten hot in the moment and or just leave it alone. You can't really
yes,
reheat.
Yes, beignets survive. A day or two.
All right. Well, that's good to know.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we have a listener who has called in. He wasn't able to stay on the line. He was in a hurry. But Kevin in Fairway likes Cafe Trio's Mac Daddy, and he asserts that they were the first to hype up their mac and cheese.
That's probably true. One of the first, at least. Mm. I mean, that mac and cheese, it goes back to their original location and their original menu. I remember ordering it when they were brand new restaurants. So it's stood the test of time for sure, at least for the clientele.
And it's got quite a brandable name, the Mac Daddy.
Oh, yeah. You want to sit on his lap, you know.
That's one interpretation. Okay, so you can join this conversation at 816.
Or not.
Or not. But we hope you will if you have strong feelings about mac and cheese, which I feel like a lot of people do.
Everybody loves it.
Yes.
They really do.
816-235-2888. So let's get back to our critics' recommendations. We are on the sort of like specialty mac and cheeses. And Jenny Vergara, you are talking about a truffled macaroni. And that seems to be one of the trends.
Yes, for sure. You know, the thing about the reason this makes my list, being a bit of a purist in terms of kind of how I like to eat my mac and cheese, is because the truffles are actually shaved on top after the macaroni and cheese is done. So it isn't something that's in the pasta or in the mix necessarily. It's just a nice, it would be similar to the breadcrumbs or a little sprinkling of Parmesan cheese or something after the fact. But this is at Eddie V's.
I was going to say it's got to be expensive to have real truffles on the top.
That's right. That's right. So Eddie V's is on the Country Club Plaza. And basically, it's a pasta that's got a kind of a creamy bechamel sauce with flour butter milk. And then basically, it's Parmesan cheese that's added to it. And it's stuck in the oven until it's kind of bubbly and it's got a bit of a crust. And then they just shave just a teeny, you know, it's just like the bits and bobs. I mean, it's not necessarily like a big coming to your table and, you know, doing a truffle shuffle, if you will, over the top of your mac and cheese. It just kind of comes out with a light little sprinkling.
The truffle shuffle. Jenny, that is a Goonies reference.
I know. How about that?
Okay. I liked it. How
just
I liked
needed
it.
To stop and acknowledge that.
That's
Wait,
right.
Go on.
That's
go on.
Right.
Keep talking about the macaroni
but
and cheese.
But, you know, the thing about the truffle is that it gives it the scent, maybe, and a little bit of the flavor of kind of umami and mushroom and kind of an earthiness that brings the dish kind of home for me. So
it feels like that does grown-upify it.
My pants are fancy. My pants are fancy.
So Eddie V's truffled macaroni and cheese. It is a side dish. Jenny Vergara likes it. It's earthy. It sounds really good. Okay. Lou Jane Temple, talk to me about the extra virgin poblano mac and cheese. This is also on Jenny's list, and the two of you may discuss, but go ahead and kick this off.
Yes, yes. I noticed that it was on both of our lists. And it's one of the first places, I think, that had it on the when they first opened, really, it's been on a long time, which makes me feel that it sells well for them. And it's not hot. Poblanos aren't a hot chili. It just gives it a nice little heat that comes up as you're eating it. And it's creamy. When I had Cafe Lulu, one of the things that is so important to me we didn't put the macaroni and the sauce together until it was ordered, and then we put it in the oven, you know, for whatever. It's
interesting. What for what reason?
Well, because the pasta absorbs the sauce.
Ah, so it sort of breaks down a little.
Well, no, it
disappears.
It disappears. Yeah. I mean, I know you've been at a cafeteria at 3 in the afternoon. That macaroni and cheese, there's not a bit of a drip to it. You could eat it like a candy bar at that point in the day. Yeah. So it's just a matter of simple science that the pasta just scoops right up that. Mm-hmm. And I like it to be creamy. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that they do. I believe... I've never asked Michael because, you know, sometimes it's better to not know and just imagine.
But it seems to you that they follow that rule.
They probably put them together just at the last minute because it's nice and creamy, don't you think?
Yeah, that would make total sense to me. The other thing, too, is I think they smoke the poblanos or roast them and then peel the skin off. So there's an awful lot of flavor that can be imparted into a pepper if you roast it over open flame. And then it's really soft and malleable and they can just kind of mix it in. And you're right, it's not a spike of heat, but it's just that note of kind of smoky, just a little tiny touch of something in the background. Kind of grassy and green that's in the middle of this richness, and that's probably why I love it because it just kind of cuts all
it.
That for me.
It cuts it.
Yeah.
And you can do that with your gas stove at home. Just put the chili right on the gas flame and keep turning it around.
Whoa, really?
When it gets black on all sides, stick it in a brown paper sack for like 10 minutes that softens it right up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then you have a chili ready to put in something.
You just changed my life.
Yeah. It's easy to do.
So this is at Extra Virgin, their poblano mac and cheese. It made two of our critics' lists. Carlton, you know, I want to get back to mac and cheeses with good nicknames because they are bountiful.
Mm-hmm.
Smack and cheese.
What?
All right, do tell. Break it down.
Yes, a smack and cheese. Okay, so the smack and cheese at the Well is it's very flavorful. I think that's a very important part of a good macaroni and cheese. You can have a very flavorful cheddar mac and cheese, or if you get the right blend of cheeses, it even adds more punch to it. I got that at the Well. And it's penne noodles, and the sauce is Gouda, pepper jack, cheddar, and jack cheeses, and it has a little topping of bacon and what they call a Parmesan streusel.
Why do they call it that?
It is kind of a topping of Parmesan and breadcrumbs.
Ah,
so it's like if you think dessert streusel usually has some sort of, you know, topping.
How does it smack you?
Yeah, where's
the smack?
You take a bite and you go, oh!
Oh, okay. It's good.
It's flavorful. Oh, yes, it smacks you.
You're smacking yourself. It's
yes,
so good.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
There's something about that whole, like, mac that I think makes people want to, like, give it a nickname.
Exactly.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a caller, I just want to say, who was not totally comfortable talking on the radio, but he did want to tell us that his aunt made mac and cheese every Christmas, and it was probably the worst mac and cheese. But now that he's older, that aunt can't cook anymore, and he makes it, it makes him nostalgic to hear our show for his Christmases past. I think there is, we should acknowledge, while we're talking about these more innovative mac and cheeses, that there is something purely nostalgic about this for many of us.
Well, and a lot of people incorporate mac and cheese in their holidays. I mean, this is a festive, rich, I mean, this is probably not a dish you should be eating every day. So it is kind of, it tends to fall a little bit into special occasion category. So I can totally see that. Somebody's Christmas dinner.
And kids
love it. That's right.
Thus I got the request in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we will get right back to this conversation about mac and cheese on Kansas City's menus. You still have just a little time left to call 816-235-2888 with your vote for who has the best mac and cheese in town. Seriously, just a little time left for that, guys. 816-235-2888, plus a trip to a new lunch counter served up with a side of Kansas City lunch counter history. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and we're talking mac and cheese on Kansas City menus with Lou Jane Temple, Jenny Vergara, and Carlton Logan. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
So let's get right back to it. Carlton, I want to get back to your traditional side dish mac and cheese recommendations, because I think that this is a mac and cheese type, you mm-hmm. know, like, and a lot of people, that's what they want, despite how elaborate they've gotten. It takes you back. It's consistent. You know what you're going to get. You are recommending Best Regards Bakery and Cafe?
Yes. So Robert at Best Regards, he has it's a bakery, of course, and has a little cafe with sandwiches and soups and things like that. And he recently, within the past year, added macaroni and cheese. Everybody mm-hmm. loves macaroni and cheese. It is a macaroni and cheese with Tillamook cheddar. Everyone loves Tillamook cheese. Mm-hmm. Gouda, Parmesan, and a mystery cheese he won't tell me.
Really?
Yes.
It must be really something, or else it's American cheese.
And it's
slices.
One of those things, like a lot of foodies, we're challenged. So
it's
if Provo. We're tasting something, we want to know what it is. So I'm constantly tasting it going, what is it?
What is it?
Is it? Yes. Mm-hmm. And his is the little shells, if I remember.
Hmm. So that's at Best Regards Bakery and Cafe. Where mm-hmm. Where is that?
It's on Glenwood at 119th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then O'Neill's Restaurant and Bar.
Yes. O'Neill's has a very creamy macaroni and cheese. It's a very, how do I describe it? Very creamy. It's a nice portion. What I noticed was I saw these little white specks and I thought, okay, what is this? And then I realized a friend of mine makes macaroni and cheese with cottage cheese.
Whoa.
And so it has little specks of the cottage cheese. Now, I don't like cottage cheese.
On its own.
I'm not you don't put sugar, peaches. I'm not liking it. But in the macaroni and cheese, it adds a very different texture to it.
Huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's at O'Neill's Restaurant and Bar.
Yes.
We have some recommendations on Twitter. And I want to say Beth on Twitter is recommending Slaps Barbecue in KCK. She says they have a really good mac and cheese, very creamy with bacon. But we've heard about one barbecue place with mac and cheese. Any others? Is that fairly standard at barbecue places or no?
I think it's becoming. Yeah. Burnt End Barbecue has a mac and cheese.
Danny Edwards does.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of barbecue places, and, you know, I think it's good because a lot of times people talk about barbecue places because they talk about the burnt ends or they talk about the ribs. And I think a lot of barbecue joints are now challenged with, we got to have some good sides to go with these wonderful selections of meat. So I think a lot of them are stepping up the plate and going, everybody loves macaroni and cheese.
Well, and sides can distinguish barbecue places from each other.
Exactly.
A good distinctive side.
Yeah. In fact, I am just hearing now from Twitter if anyone that Joe's Kansas City has a new mac and cheese side dish, but the person contacting us has not tried it. Have you?
No.
So this is, I guess, big barbecue mm-hmm. news,
let
guys.
Me write
breaking
this down.
News.
We will go soon.
Jenny, you are recommending a place called Brown Sugar Chicken and Donuts, which definitely sounds like a place that ought to have a good mac and cheese.
Doesn't it? It does. That's why it's on my list. Yeah, this is a brand new place that just opened up a couple weeks ago in KCK, and Chef Michael Black is the chef there. And he basically has on his menu, it's called a three cheese macaroni and cheese, and it's a side dish that you can get with. They're doing wings and they're doing tenders. So these are fried chicken wings, fried chicken tenders, and you can do all kinds of boxed meals. And this is one of the side dishes that you can add on to your order if you'd like. This particular one has golden cheddar, pepper jack, and American. So there's just a little bit of heat from the pepper jack that kind of makes it stand out. It's just a classic elbow macaroni, a little Parmesan, and a little garlic butter breadcrumb on top for a little crunch. And so if you're going to go to a place called Brown Sugar Chicken and Donuts, which serves indeed
brown sugar brined fried chicken and delicious donuts. You must get this lovely mac and cheese as a side.
It sounds like it would round out that meal.
I'm telling
perfectly.
You, everybody needs to go before you hit your diet at the new year, right?
Just, yes.
This should be your piece de resistance at the end of the year. That's right.
Lou Jane Temple, tell me about Mickey's Hideaway. Again, great nickname, Cadillac Mac.
Well, you know, when we were talking about barbecue places, putting sides on, Mickey's is the old McCoy's.
Gotcha.
In Westport.
I have been wondering about what that's like, because that was such an institution at that corner, and they were known for their mac and cheese.
And they were, and they now have four different iterations of mac and cheese on the menu. As it turns out, it's the same owners that owned McCoy's. So, and they also somehow are partners with the Charbar people are next door. So this particular one that I mentioned, the Cadillac, has burnt ends from next door torn up on top of it, plus chicharrones, which are the fried pork
That's
rinds.
In the mac and cheese?
It's on top.
Oh, my gosh. See, it seems like I am noticing that the little crunch keeps coming up in a lot
crunch.
Of these favored mac and cheeses. Yep.
Yes, and when you were talking about the Parmesan streusel, the way that I make mine is I take a sack of potato chips and, you know, open it up just a little bit so it won't, and smash it with my hand, which is most fun. And then, you know, kind of go like this, so they're little pieces, and then toss it with parm for the topping.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be delicious,
too. Oh, it is. It's good. And so this Mickey's with the chicharrones, it was the same idea, only different, you know, of having something really crunchy and
texture.
Then having the meat and then having the gooey, cheesy sauce.
Okay, I want to say something. We are getting a lot of calls today from people who are giving their recommendations and then getting off the phone. And my theory on this, and I could be wrong, but maybe it's a self-serving theory, but my theory here is that these mac and cheese fiends out there need to get off the phone and listen to you guys. So that being said,
either that or they don't want anyone to hear their voice.
Maybe
saying
so. Tina from Kansas City cannot talk on the phone, but she has given us a couple of her favorites. She says that Beer Kitchen, she gets their mac and cheese with short ribs and cheese onions. I don't know what that means. But West Side Local, super creamy. Her boyfriend likes it, and he doesn't even like mac and cheese.
So there you have it.
Wow.
That's a good compliment, I guess.
And then Dan from Kansas City, also, he can't stay on the phone either, but he recommends Affair, the German mac and cheese. There is also a lobster version.
That would be the... You know,
Spitzel or Spatzel?
Upper echelon.
Yes, definitely.
Well, so anyway.
The more adult version.
Carlton, if you only get to recommend one more mac and cheese today, what's it going to be?
One more mac and cheese. I have to say my favorite is the Well, but then also Strips Chicken is again in that kind of entree, if you want to go that route. And, you know, everybody's doing bowls now, so Strips has a mac and cheese bowl.
Which, so just mac and cheese served in a bowl?
In a bowl with bacon and chunks of chicken, breaded chicken.
I have not heard so far about a lot of the sort of like veggie-dressed mac and cheeses. And those are, I thought, pretty popular. Like, I've seen Brussels sprouts on mac and cheese on menus. I've seen broccoli. Everyone's just kind of like...
Why would you... everyone could see the look on Jenny's face said Brussels sprouts. I mean...
I actually like Brussels sprouts, not necessarily in my mac and cheese.
I do, too.
But. There are places that are doing vegetables, but again, it's... And I guess we're getting into that, you know, if it's like an entree, to me, it's almost like a casserole.
Well, at some point, mac and cheese stops becoming mac and cheese, and it becomes a pasta dish with meat and veg and other things.
Yes.
I mean, we have to kind of recognize that there's a fine line when elbow macaroni gets tossed out the window and penne takes its place.
Yes.
And there's a cheese sauce and there's veg and there's meat. It's becoming a bit of something else.
Yes. And it's okay. I mean, if people like that. But again, you know, some of us are more traditional, classic, and then...
Well, so this is Strips Chicken. It does make Carlton's list. It's a bowl. It's got bacon and it's got chunks of chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny, we have to do this one quick.
Yep.
But tell me about Sierra Grill.
Yes, that would be the one I would pick, absolutely. This is a pretty classic mac and cheese. This is a place that does a lot of grilled meats, so they have it as a side on their menu. It does come with really crispy cubes of pork belly that kind of serve that bacon category. That's a little chewy, adds just a texture point in there. It's not necessarily crunchy and crispy on top, but it's just a few cubes of it, and I think it does add a lot of flavor. But Sierra Grill, if you haven't checked it out, it's an old Quiznos that's been converted, and it is a fabulous place to go.
Sounds awesome. We are going to have to leave it there, but Jenny Vergara, Carlton Logan, Lou Jane Temple, thank you all so much.
Thank you for having us.
It was a pleasure.
The list of the best mac and cheese in Kansas City will be online at kcur.org over the weekend. But now, a super high-end restaurant in the Crossroads is opening a lunch counter, which is not just a foray into the more fast, casual, affordable type of food. It's also about nostalgia. KCUR's Avery Gott went downtown to check it out and to learn more about Kansas City's lunch counter history.
Eight smash patty burgers are on the grill top at Corvino's Supper Club and Tasting Room. Usually, this kitchen is producing perfectly plated luxury foods, but now, every weekday afternoon, it's bustling with cooks churning out burgers and fries to go at a lightning pace. For Michael Corvino, this lowbrow food is nostalgia. Before opening the restaurant with Christina Corvino, he rose through the ranks cooking at luxury hotels. He says opening the new lunch counter Ravenous gave him the opportunity to make food that everyone loves.
I think food's a lot about memories. I mean, I was just getting my hair cut, it went into a conversation of a couple of the guys' childhood memories of those lunch counter diner spots. And, you know, one guy was talking about onion rings and fried onions. Another guy was talking about grilled cheese.
Right now, Ravenous is carry out only, but the food won't always have to travel far. The lunch counter concept will soon have an actual counter just outside Corvino's back door. In a courtyard outside the building, Michael and Christina show me a pristine little white cube with a counter for ordering. It's very sleek and modern. Right now, it's covered with a tarp to keep the chill December air out. And inside, there's a full kitchen squeezed into a tiny space the size of a food truck.
Broiler, fryers, refrigeration.
It really does feel like a food truck. Yeah, without wheels. It really does.
I mean, this is a full grill hood and everything.
The cube is surrounded by big, modern picnic tables and two hanging chairs. The food here may be nostalgic, but this contemporary outdoor environment is not at all what most might picture as a classic lunch counter.
They were places where people who were oftentimes shopping would need to just have a break.
This is Kansas City food historian Andrea Broomfield. She says lunch counters became prevalent downtown during the early 20th century and reached their height after World War II, before fast food and the automobile as we know it really took over in Kansas City. They were an essential part of a day on the town.
You could go in and just take a breath, have some sort of snack, and then be on your way.
Then in the 60s, they were a major hotspot for boycotts and sit-ins against segregation, especially in Kansas City. Broomfield says lunch counter spots may have been targets because they were places people should have been able to stop at to relax and take a break from walking or to use the restroom.
People really felt like they're being excluded from the natural need to refresh themselves was absolutely one of the most atrocious parts of what it meant to live in a segregated country.
She says today, the lunch counters most Kansas Cityans remember nostalgically are associated with downtown department stores and diners. And Broomfield says there is one department store nearby that still has a lunch counter, Nordstrom's at Oak Park Mall.
Well, it's not kind of the pedestrian lunch counter that you might associate with the Woolworths or the Katz's. It's more upscale in that it's more like a dining room. Nordstrom's might have that same setup in part because there's a memory.
Broomfield says department store lunch counters declined when white flight emptied downtowns across the country, taking the downtown department stores and their lunch counters with them. Fast food chains filled the role lunch counters had played, and department stores moved into suburban malls.
Most of these malls were designed to have a food court.
That made department store food a moot point. But today, malls are on the decline. Even the Oak Park Mall Nordstrom's is moving out of the suburbs and into the plaza. So, will Kansas City's booming downtown spark a resurgence of lunch counters? Broomfield says, maybe. But there is one thing that hasn't changed about lunch counters. That's burgers and fries.
Thank you so much.
That was KCUR intern Avery Gott. She visited the forthcoming lunch counter from Michael Corvino. It's called Ravenous, and took us on that trip down memory lane to the lunch counters of Kansas City's past. That's a wrap for today on KCUR's Central Standard. You can go to kcur.org/centralstandard later in the day to grab a link to today's show in case you want to share it with anyone else. That's where we archive all of these conversations. Be sure and check out yesterday's look back on the big moments of the past decade here in Kansas City while you're there. kcur.org/centralstandard. And talk to us on Twitter anytime. We are at KCURCST. This show is produced by Melody Rowell, Mackenzie Martin, and Noah Taborda. Sylvia Maria Gross is our senior producer. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. And that's it for today. That's it for the week. And tune in again on Monday. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next.